Okay, we are celebrating Serving Day today, and I wanted to just share a couple of things with you. We're also celebrating Compassion Sunday today, and so we're going to get into that in a little bit. But I wanted to take a moment to frame in a biblical kind of way what we're doing, how it fits in with following Jesus, why this is important, how much of a burden is it for us, is it our main focus or a subset of our main focus, that kind of a thing. And so you've heard a little bit about what went on yesterday. And really what this is, today and yesterday, is a continuation of our celebration of Easter. We're still celebrating Easter. In fact, actually, we celebrate Easter every Sunday. The whole reason that we worship on a Sunday is because that's the day on which Jesus was resurrected from the dead. And so that's why we moved it from Saturday to Sunday way back, because it was the day in which Jesus was raised from the dead. So we're always celebrating Easter. But in particular, we're celebrating this past Easter and the themes that we were looking at together as a church in Mark 10:45. And if you want to open to that, you can. It's just going to be one verse that we're going to look at here. And we looked at it already on Easter, Mark 10:45. I believe it's page 706 if you're using one of the Bibles that we have. Or you can just listen. You'll catch it pretty quickly here. So in Mark 10:45, kind of summarizing at the end of this interaction that Jesus has with the disciples, it says this: "For even the Son of Man," that's how Jesus refers to himself, and it refers to the loftiness of who he is. "For even the Son of Man," this great man, "did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." And there are a couple of things going on there that we've been focusing on over Easter and then the subsequent weeks. The first one is salvation, wrapped up in that whole idea of God, Jesus offering himself as a ransom. And the second one is service. His service was to offer himself as a ransom, but he's also at the same time calling us to service. So it's salvation and it's service. Those are the two poles that we've been looking at. And on the salvation side, like I say, it's wrapped up in this concept of the ransom theology. We talked about how over Easter weekend there was the captain of the ship they were attacked by pirates, and the captain offered himself as a ransom, right, for the rest of the crew. And the rest of this crew were allowed to go free, back to their family, back home, to take their very valuable supplies, some things for world vision and for food supplies. They were able to take them to their place because he offered himself, this captain did, as a ransom, okay, and the rest were set free. Well, in the same way, this text says, Jesus offers himself as a ransom. Now, we're the captives in this. We're the ones who are caught captive, and we're caught captive in our sin, is what it says. And Jesus offers himself to set us free. And I came back to my office right after Easter worship, and I opened up my computer, and there, you know, on the news was that the captain had been saved. He'd offered himself as a ransom, and they were able to get him back. Now, the downside is there was loss of life involved in the saving of this captain. It was a difficult thing, and again, that just drives home the point why it's so important that we overcome sin, because sin is the source of all of this trauma and the difficulty we were saying, and all the problems in our world. Really, they come down, the brokenness, the fallenness of this world comes down to the presence of sin. And so if somebody can release us from that captivity, if we can be freed from the captivity of sin, that's really the key. That's going to make the biggest change in the world. That's what really matters. And last week we had the practical application of this salvation side of things, because we celebrated baptism. And we had Mike and Monica and Hugh and Salem and Cassette shared their stories with us, and they were baptized. And if you weren't here last week, you weren't able to hear their stories, we've got permission to put them on with our sermons. So if you just go onto our website, look at the sermons, you can hear those stories. I highly recommend that you do it, because they're very powerful, and you can see firsthand how God has been working in people's lives to bring them out of captivity and to give them the freedom that we all long for. It's a beautiful thing. And the way it works is simply that, you know, Jesus overcame sin by his death. He offered himself as a sacrifice to receive the punishment for sin into himself. And that death then landed him into the tomb. But he, in that death, conquered sin. And so God raised him up out of the tomb and brought him out. That's the resurrection. And it's like an exclamation point on this work that he's doing of overcoming sin. Because the Bible says the wages of sin is death. So if you can overcome death, like Jesus did, then you must have overcome sin. And baptism is a celebration of a person being united to Jesus Christ in that death and that resurrection. And so that was our celebration of our being freed, of Jesus offering himself as a ransom and salvation coming. Baptism is a symbol of that unification with Christ. Now, we said, you know, at the same time, it's not that somebody goes off now and doesn't ever do anything stupid, doesn't sin anymore, right? It takes time for us to grow into this new identity that Christ has given us, this freedom that we've been given. It takes time. In fact, it takes an entire lifetime. And at the end of our lives, we'll still be growing into it. We'll still be growing into... But what's happened is that the power of sin has been broken in us. The power of sin has been broken in us. That's what Jesus did. That's where the salvation comes into play. And I just want to say, sort of as a first quick thing, that if you haven't, you know, told Jesus that you want this gift of salvation, that his offering himself, his ransom is for you, then this is really the first thing. We're talking a lot about serving today and doing good things, but the first step is getting right with God through the offer of salvation. That's the first step. And if you're here this morning and, you know, you're still grappling with that, I'm encouraging you to pause there and to think about, okay, what does it mean to get right with God, to receive the gift that he has given and to have it applied to my life and to the sin that I have committed in this world. That's the first thing that we're going to talk about. The second one is this. Now, once we get that straight, once we understand, once we get the salvation part, then we can move to the service part. We weren't freed. We weren't freed from this captivity to then go and be selfish, okay? To live self-centered lives. That's what Jesus says. He says he came to serve, and he's our model, and we're supposed to follow him to serve like he did. So the second piece is that we're not freed for selfish reasons, but to serve. John 3:16, we all know, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, right? And this talks about salvation. But then there's 1 John 3:16. This is the second piece. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. We ought to lay down our lives for our brothers, okay, and sisters. And you saw that sort of the sweetness, I think, in Sharon's testimony when she saw this woman who's living in squalor, essentially, and there's a brokenness there and a willingness now to make sacrifice for that person because it's not going to be easy. But that's what we're to do with the freedom that we've been given in Christ, is to sacrifice. This is what Jesus does. Now, you don't want to push, you can't just push a button and become selfless. It takes time. And that's why we're doing what we're doing yesterday and today and throughout the next while. You can't just push a button and become a selfless person. It takes step work. It takes work to become less focus on self, and we need one another to do that. And so that's why we go out and we do Count Me In, because we begin to trust a little bit. We take a step of faith. I loved Gary's testimony about how he took a step of faith and God showed himself to be faithful. And that encourages us and strengthens us. So then we can take the next step of sacrifice and God will show himself to be faithful and we become more and more sacrificial. And before you know it, we're starting to look at the world like Jesus looked at the world. We're starting to be servers, to look at Jesus through the eyes, to look at the world through the eyes of Christ. And this is absolutely critical to what it means to become a Christian. James said it this way. He said, "Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world." Now, this is why we're doing the things that we're doing. Okay, this is why we do Count Me In like we did yesterday. We do compassion ministry, which we're going to talk about in just a second, and you're going to see a video about this. It's about supporting needy children around the world. It's why we've been involved in international justice ministry and mission, and we're going to try and be more involved in that. And, you know, this is why in our home groups, we're going to continue to grow as servants. One of our home groups is really advanced, I think, in this. They're really talking about what does it mean as a home group to be together and to serve others. And they're making tangible sacrifices for one another and to position themselves to be able to serve God more effectively. And it's costing them. It's costing them sacrifice. but it's resulting in ministry that wouldn't have otherwise happened. And this is where we want to be going as a church, as God makes us more like Christ. And it's not that we're making a huge difference in the world. We need to get this straight. When we do count me in like yesterday, we don't come back and say, oh, we just did so much. Aren't we great? You know, look at all the things that have happened. No. The world is a mess, right? The world is a mess. And it's overwhelming to think that you're going to fix it all. But we are making a small difference. We're doing something important and something significant. And the result of that is twofold. It's blessing the people that we saw, like in the pictures, the elderly people that we were working with and for. But it's also doing something to us. It's changing us on the inside, making us more like Jesus. Pretty soon we become people who say, you know, wow, I've got a life, right? I've got breath. I've got arms. I've got legs. I've got resources. Who do they belong to? They don't belong to me. They belong to Jesus. And the question becomes then not, what am I going to do today to satisfy my needs in this world? The question becomes, how am I going to take the resource that I am, that I've been given, all my gifts and talents and everything that I am, how am I going to take this today and put it at Christ's disposal for Him to do with me what He wants to do with me? And that's living. That's what you and I were meant to be. That's what we were how we were intended to live. And that's what Jesus Christ says is our model. So as we go forward in serving, this is what we need to keep clear in our mind. And we're going to take another step right now because I'm going to invite Susanna and Don to come forward. I'm not sure which one of you wants to go first, but they're going to share with us a little bit about what they have experienced and known and learned from sponsoring a child through Compassion International.
Thank you, Patrick. Good morning. A lot of you know me, and Andrew, everything you said is exactly what God did as far as having us sponsor children, just really changing who I am and how I perceive the world around me. I think most of you know me, I love to travel, and I had an opportunity that just kind of popped into my lap in fall 2004 to go to Peru. And it was on my list, and I always wanted to go to the Sacred Valley and see Machu Picchu, and I thought this would be terrific. And so I went for 10 days, and I saw everything I wanted to see, and it was absolutely fabulous. And I came home a changed person, because not just the beauty of what I had seen, but the extreme poverty that I experienced that I had no idea of. I'd done a lot of travel in Mexico and Central America, but had never been to South America. And people living under wagons in the marketplace, children playing in the streets, and with, you know, unable to be clean because they don't have bathrooms. And it was just heart-rending. Usually when I travel in these countries, there are children that are begging for coins. Here they were begging for pencils for school so that they could learn. There was one little girl that we picked up leaving one of the archaeological sites. It was the end of the day, and she had a little goat in her arms. And our driver asked, you know, can we give her a ride? And we said, sure. You know, we're up. This was a mountain. And she was walking down it. It took us about 45 minutes to get to the bottom where we left her off near her home. And she had walked up that mountain in the morning to be there for the tourists so that they could take her picture so she could get some coins with this little goat. And so we, you know, we all have road munchies, right? So we're giving her all the care, because she's had nothing all day. And she was very hesitant to take any food from us. But we pressed it upon her, and so she, you know, kind of put it in her clothing, you know, wrapped it up. We knew that she was going to take it home. And when she got off the bus, the driver told us the reason why, I mean, she is going to share it with her family, but she's afraid to eat because she doesn't want to grow. Because if she gets big, then she's not going to be cute, and then people won't want to take her picture. And so she's starving herself to help her family earn an income. So it's just one of the stories. So I came home, and I told her, we've got to do something. And just felt overwhelmed. I had no idea what to do. And so in the spring, we had a presentation about Compassion Sunday. And there was no ifs, ands, or buts. I'd been praying, and we didn't bother stopping in the back. There was a bunch of people in the back that were there to talk to people about Compassion Sunday. And I told Don, we're just going to call them, you know, and we're each going to get a child. And it's the very least that we can do. And so in May 2005, I received a little packet about, and I didn't choose Peru. I chose the Americas. And I told them, you know, because I figured they'd give me who needed it the most. And I got a little packet about Gutasine Montes, who lives in Haiti. And she lives with her mother, and she was 8 years old at the time, and was responsible for carrying water and gathering firewood and caring for animals. And so we'd write, she likes to jump rope, and when I was 8 years old, I loved to jump rope. And so we write to each other every quarter. We get letters back and forth, and sometimes I write a little more often because she shares with me about her life. She's never mentioned her father, and she's never mentioned an uncle, but I prayed for her aunt as well. And with the monies that we send, she's been able to buy a dress and shoes, and last Christmas she bought a goat, which will help with a family diet. And it's changed my life to be a part of this little girl's life, to be able to help her family, to be able to help her community. Now, I have to be honest, I'd heard about Compassion Sunday for many years. This is a presentation that's gone on. And I thought, yeah, okay, you get a letter, you know, you're helping someone. But you are making a tremendous impact in people's lives. And it's such... It's so easy, and it's such an honor and a privilege. And so I am blessed that God used, you know, what he used to humble my heart and to show me the need. And I encourage all of you that if you're touched, to pray about this and to see that you can help. There's so many that need help. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. For those who don't know me, my name is Don Schaefer, and this is my compassion child. His name is Nsengimana Faustin, and this is a picture of him from 4 years ago. This is a more current photograph, and in my right hand are all the letters that he has written me over the past 4 years. And from these letters, I know a little bit about my compassion child. I know that he's soon going to be 10 years old, and that he lives in Rwanda with his parents and his three brothers and sisters. They subsist by farming, and he farms as well. Nsengimana enjoys playing soccer. He goes to school in Rwanda, where he lives, and could be doing a little bit better in school than perhaps what his parents expect of him, but there's a prayer in there about that. And he also attends a local church, although I suspect, given from what I know about him, that he and his family probably break the fourth commandment every single day. That is to say, I don't think there's a lot of days of rest for him. In fact, I suspect they're very rare. Beyond his letters, I know that Nsengimana and his family and his community in which he lives in Rwanda is very poor, that his country has been plagued 15 years ago, in fact, by an especially bloody civil war, that AIDS and malaria are probably as common to them as the common cold is to us, and that our worst day is probably better than his best of days. Rwanda, where Nsengimana lives, doesn't have recessions. They're basically in a perpetual state of depression. And in contrast to that, I know that God has greatly blessed me and that I feel compelled to share my blessings with others. And, you know, and to let you know, it's really, really easy to sponsor a Compassion Child. Susanna's talked about contacting Compassion, but in terms of the monthly stipend that we send along, I just do it online every month when we pay our bills, you know, first of the month, in addition to paying, you know, the Discover card and the American Express card and this card and that card, I just click and $33 goes to Susanna's Compassion Child, and click again, and another $33 goes to my Compassion Child. In my left hand, by the way, are all the letters that I have written, my Compassion Child. So with that in mind, do as I do. Please sponsor a Compassion Child, but don't do as I do. When you do so, write to them. Thank you.
My name is Kristuraj and I am 15 years old. I live in Satyavan Muthu Nagar in Chennai, India. In the morning, I get up at 5 o'clock and I get ready for the day. I brush my teeth, I bathe and I get dressed for school. My father lost his sight in both eyes due to smallpox. I have looked after him ever since he became blind. I take him everywhere. My auntie gave us our place to live, since we had nowhere else to go, but it doesn't have a door or a bathroom. I used to stay with my auntie, but I would see my father sleeping there alone and would worry about him getting infections from all the mosquitoes that were biting him. So I decided to stay with him there so I could protect him. Because there is no door, we're exposed to all sorts of vulnerabilities, like the drunk people who pass by. My father will say, "Why are you drinking?" and they scold him. When I was 5 years old, my mother left us. I don't know where she went. I feel very sad that she isn't around, especially when I see other children receiving love and affection. I wonder why my mom is not here for me.
Kristuraj was taken in our project as a Compassion Child. He is continuing his studies only because of compassion, only because of Andrew's Kirk Child Development Center. That I can tell you 100%. I want him to put in a industrial training trade where there is a lot of employment opportunities. We have given him that much of hope. He will never feel that he is unattended because we are there. Compassion is there. The sponsors are there to meet his needs.
If compassion had not been here to support me, we would have ended up as beggars on the street, eating whatever people throw down to us. When I go to the project, I study for some time. I play carom and football with my friends. I get dinner at the project and then I go home. My favorite thing about the project is the Bible classes. When I was first registered at the project, I didn't believe in God. But through the classes and the project teachers, I have learned about God's love. I love my sponsor. I pray for her. I pray that God will protect her and provide all her needs so she doesn't go through hardships. When I get older, I want to do something to help my sponsor because of all the help she has given me.
Compassion works with the poorest of the poor. And I've seen really children who have been so vulnerable have come into this program and are having a safe and happy future. And this is why I love compassion.
There are so many children in my community who have to work really hard and have difficult lives. If you could come and help through compassion, that would be a great thing. Don't just help me.
I forgot to introduce myself earlier. My name is Laurel, Laurel Ballier. My maiden name is kind of difficult. It's Ballier Morrison. I feel very blessed to be serving this church as missions director, and today is my debut, so to speak. I have seen that clip about four times, and every time I see it, I pick up something different. Yesterday, after completing the project at Ocean View School, it hit me. Our kids had a choice to go to work at the school. But many children in two-thirds world countries don't have that choice. They have to work. They're forced to work. They don't get to go home and take a bath and have a nice dinner or get to go out and go to school, go to church, and so forth. They have to work. And so I've realized that poverty is not just an absence of resources, financial resources, but it's also an absence of choices. You just don't have as many choices when you're hit by poverty. So we want to do some little thing. Like Andrew said, we can't do the whole world. That'd be a lot of weeds and a lot of mess to clean up. But we can do our part. And so I'm going to invite you to do these three things. The first one is to share, to consider sharing your resources. I don't know whether the price went down because of the recession, but the figures I got were $32 a month. So for about a dollar a day, you can make the difference in the life of a child, a family, a country, a community, a church. You might think about what would you be willing to give up? You know, if you go to Starbucks every day and even just get a cup of tea, that costs like $1.50. If you could give that up, you could make such a difference in the life of a child. Or maybe there's something else. Maybe you do a fancy latte, you know, on a regular basis, and that's something you might be willing to give up. So think about that. We have packets in the back of 15 children. One has already been chosen, so to speak. And so there's plenty of opportunities. These children are from Kenya, Ethiopia, Bolivia, Honduras, and I think that's all of them. And Haiti, thank you. So share the resources that you have. And then I'm going to ask you to pray. So share in prayer. Pray for these children. Don't just pray for the children, but pray for their families. Pray for their churches and their pastors. And I'm going to urge you to watch, when you watch the news, read the news online, in the newspaper, use that news as an opportunity to pray for that country. Because you were mentioning Rwanda. And, you know, there's a tremendous amount of bondage and evil and sin that we need to be praying about. So put these children's pictures in a prominent place. Ours is on a refrigerator. And it reminds us how much we have inside and that we're trying to make a little difference. And then the other thing that Dawn urged you to do is to care. So share prayer and care. Care meaning take the extra step. Take 5 or 10 minutes to write a note to them or send a card. And I believe there's a way for us to do that. So check it out. You know, of course, you're not under any obligation today, but we would like for you to at least consider the possibility. And you might be able to do what two people in this church do. One gives the money and the other sends the letter. So you could team up with another person to do that, or even your home group might want to sponsor a child, and you could take turns writing a letter. So those are just my ideas. Thanks.